The Fan on Demand. It's always a race to be the first to tell you new information. Ready, set, go. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning, Brady and Walker on your Friday. Andrew Walker and Eric Smith in for one last day. One last day of ripping them and follow or unfollow coming up at 6:31. We've been pretty easy on you.
Not bad. All told.
You were at the game yesterday with your old man. I was there with Jason Rozon. I would have preferred to be where you were, actually, at the end of it. But what a day. You take your dad to a game, and you're sitting there. You're in the sun at the Rogers Center. And through six innings, I don't know if you guys were talking about it, what your etiquette is, but through six innings, we had a possible no-hitter with Marcus Stroman, and Juan Francisco was a double away from the cycle. What an incredible afternoon.
You want me to, like, give the lead right at 5:30? At the end of the sixth inning, I said to my dad, like, after the Jays had hit, I said, who's going to be the first to be the jinx? And he looked at me and said, oh, I know. I said, I wonder if anybody said it on the air. He's like, yeah, I wonder. I said, do you think we just were the jinx right now? He's like, probably. And then the very first guy that comes up, I mean, I'm sure there were plenty of people that were thinking that, whether it be in the fourth or fifth or whatever.
Yeah.
And you literally could kind of feel it. Everybody.
It's
not like the place was going bananas through the game. People were enjoying themselves. The kids were there. It was camp day. But it was almost more like it was quieter because of just waiting for the anticipation of, is this happening?
The game was not in doubt anymore. It was 8-0.
Yep.
Ruby De La Rosa wasn't fooling anybody. Jays were knocking him around. And the second that Stroman got his first out of the fifth inning, there was a bit of a hush because everyone knew that, all right, now we're getting to it. And he gets out of the fifth, and he does it in convincing fashion. And then it got real. And the sixth inning was this murmur, and it grew and it grew. Then he's through six, and everybody was ready in the seventh. And Victorino bloops one. That was the tough part of this. You didn't want to see it end like that. If someone hits it off the scoreboard.
That's so often the case, though, isn't it?
It's a bloop.
Or it's an infield single that a guy just legs one out on a tough one behind third base or something. It seems like that's more often than not the case. And it was a tough way, but my gosh, what a performance.
Yeah, he was great. Stroman's ERA now as a starter down to 2.21. And you wanted to trade him. You dummies. We'll get into Stroman as the morning goes on. I was at Smash Fest last night.
Yeah, how was that? Did you get smashed?
I did not get smashed. It was Dominic Morris, of course, a celebrity charity ping pong tournament at the Steam Whistle Brewery. I went over after the game at about 6:30 last night, and it was great. It was jammed. It was a party. There's all these ping pong tables. There's a tournament. Now, I did not play. As much as I enjoy table tennis, I didn't play.
For any reason? Did you have the opportunity to play?
No, not really. If I would have stuck around later, there certainly was, but didn't work out that way. But there was a practice table that wasn't really being used, and it had the equivalent of, well, basically a batting pitch. What do you call it?
Pitching machine.
Yeah, a pitching machine, except it's for ping pong balls, so you can sit there and practice your forehand. It shoots out one every 2 seconds, and you can increase the speeds and all that. And there was a pro there with he was at a sponsored killer spin shirt. And so I grabbed the paddle, and I'm pretty impressed with myself at this point. I think I'm pretty good. I'm doing these forehand hits. We play all the time here. We're kind of addicted to it. And this guy basically says, you're doing everything wrong. And was like, I don't know if he was like annoyed because I was hitting some good shots or whatever. So, I mean, I was a nice guy about it. And he's like started giving me tips and my stance and my grip and doing this. And you got to do this. And he like wanted me to like lob the ball over the table like I was 6 years old. It was really annoying. And he's like, there you go.
It's ping pong. Oh, there you go.
Well, and then I try to like smash it a little harder. And I get some and someone hit the net. He's like, why are you hitting it so hard? I said, well, I'm not trying to beat the pitching machine.
generally there's another person on the other side of the table.
And I'm not going pro.
Yes, and if I lob it to the other guy, he's going to smash it out. Anyway, it was ridiculous. And Tim McAuliffe was sitting there, and afterwards, I can't believe you sat there and took that.
Did you get this guy's name?
No.
We should try and set up like a charity match, see if the pro...
I almost, you know what? I almost, because he like wouldn't leave me alone. Yeah. He kept giving me all these tips. And I almost said, do you want to play? Do you want to play? Give me odds and I'll play right now straight up. And
you should have.
Yeah, I should have.
Maybe he's setting you up for that. Oh, here, just lob it up so I can smash it back at you.
Ruin my day. Well, it didn't ruin my day, but it was annoying.
It does sound annoying.
Yeah.
Especially at a charity event. You're there to just have fun. I mean, we're not all there to turn pro into ping pong.
But congrats to Dominic Moore for a really good event last night. They raised a lot of money for concussion research and rare cancer research as well. It was the third annual. We'll certainly be back for the fourth. Marcus Stroman, the Jays offense coming alive, and where they sit in this playoff chase. Don't look now, but they're tied for that second wild card spot with the New York Yankees. They're in New York tonight where they've lost, let me see here, 73 in a row at Yankee Stadium.
Seems about right.
We'll get into it next. Andrew Walker, Eric Smith, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Prices like no other from a club like no other. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Everything you're talking about, they're talking about. Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
5:43, good morning, Brady and Walker. On your Friday, the Toronto Blue Jays take 3 of 4 from the Boston Red Sox after the season ended in that 14-1 loss to Boston on Monday.
That's a heck of a bounce back. I think we talked about it on Monday or Tuesday, the fact that, hey, you end up taking 2 of 3 when you come right out of the All-Star break. You lose that first one. You got to try and come back. Very least split. Man, wouldn't it be great if you can get 3 and get greedy and take all 3. The Jays do just that. So going a pretty good way so far in terms of trying to erase that 2-8, 5-2. Now you kind of look at, you know, combine those and say 7-10 over the last 17. It's not great, but it's kind of starting to make up a little bit for how bad it was for, you know, 2, almost 3 weeks right before the break.
And with every day that goes by, you're getting a day closer to having your real lineup, right? Adam Lind, whether or not they make any trades, and I know this is an overused rationalization in any sport, but they're going to feel like they're making trades when Adam Lind gets back and Brett Lowry gets back and Edwin Encarnacion gets back. And they're surviving over the last week. They've now won 5 of their last 6.
How frustrating is it to see, though, that the New York Yankees still aren't going away? You know, they win again. They're staying in the thick of it. Baltimore on that tough West Coast trip, another victory. So it's good that you're winning. Man, you wish you could have picked up a little bit more. But as I think a lot of people are recognizing now, especially where the Yankees and Jays sit today, tied for that second wild card, this weekend and this coming week is going to be very interesting considering the opponents for all of the teams involved, but especially this weekend.
Well, how about tonight? Because you get Boston that's now 9.5 back of the Orioles, and the Tampa Bay Rays are 7.5 back, and you got Price and Lester tonight, and they go head-to-head. Seattle, they're home to Baltimore, so someone's going to lose. You're either going to pick up ground in the wild card or the division, and then, of course, the Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays.
And that's, of course, if the Jays can actually win in New York.
They've lost 16 in a row, at Yankee Stadium.
And won 2 of the last 22.
If they can find a way to win 2 of 3 at Yankee Stadium, it's really going to feel real. Because whether they're rolling, whether they're playing terribly, it never goes right at Yankee Stadium. At least they have the right guy in the mound tonight, Mark Burley.
Now, have you looked ahead at the schedule as well that's coming up for the month of August?
I like to take things one game at a time, Eric. That's what
I
always say.
You should be on the team. You should be a manager. It's not going to get any easier as well. And this is the way it is. I mean, of course, the schedule makers try to do this. You got a lot of division games coming up. But, you know, you start off August with the Astros. You hope that that's a decent matchup for you.
Yep, you would
hope. But you're coming back home for Baltimore, the Tigers. Then you hit the road for the Mariners. Before the month's out, you've got the Rays, the Red Sox, and the Yankees again as well. I mean, it's a beast. And you're going to have to start, you know, doing it against your own division. And clearly the Jays did just that by taking three or four against the Red Sox.
Everyone's going to play each other. It's going to be incredible. And they needed this. They needed to win something like 5 of 6. And you know what? A winning two of three at Yankee Stadium would be massive. And the last time they went in there, it was a really frustrating series. Andrew Wiggins gets signed yesterday, which maybe doesn't sound like a big deal, but with this NBA rule, you sign your first round pick, and Wiggins can't be traded for at least the next 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
So to you, what does this do for all the talks about Kevin Love?
Puts it on hold for another 30 days. Literally, that's to me I shouldn't say the only impact, but that's the impact overall. And I think it is little impact. I mean, we're talking about it's July 24th yesterday when the deal goes down. You have a month. It's August 24th. You're still 6 weeks away from the beginning of training camp. It's not like you're on the heels of the season starting or something. I just think that it allows both sides to maybe sit back and decide and figure out, all right, do we want to do this? Because why has it taken so long to this point? Is it that everything we're reading and supposedly believing isn't true? Because you would assume if Minnesota is being offered a first-round pick and Andrew Wiggins and Anthony Bennett, they're going to take that deal. Because I don't know if they get a better package than that. Or it allows Minnesota to simply sit back and say, all right, we've got another month. All bidders start right now. Let's go. Because you saw Chicago in the recent days coming up with a pretty nice package as well.
But that's the thing. They can still trade Kevin Love. They can trade him right now. They can trade him tomorrow.
Absolutely.
They just can't trade him to Cleveland for Andrew Wiggins.
See, and it's interesting to get this done. I wonder if perhaps, though, part of the reason behind getting this done is to make sure that the contract signed, you know what the number is in the NBA. For those that don't know, it's a locked-in value for each pick. The number one pick makes more than the number three pick. The number seven pick makes more than the number 16 pick. It's all on a scale. So now that it's signed and it's locked in, you know exactly what you're dealing with. You know you've got the guy inked to a deal. I mean, technically, I guess, yeah, he could try and hold out, and then you've got this issue of not paying a player and what are you going to do with him. But the fact that he's locked in, you essentially control him now. Whereas if you don't sign him to the deal and you trade the rights, he could very much easily hold out. He wouldn't be getting paid, right. But he could say, hey, Minnesota, I'm not signing with you. You might have traded my draft rights or acquired my draft rights, but I am not signing with you. So I think this, in a sense, maybe helps the deal get done by the fact that he's locked into his contract.
And I don't know. I don't know Andrew Wiggins personally, but he doesn't strike me as a guy that would pull that card. But I'll tell you one thing. I don't know for sure, but I don't believe the report of the Wiggins Bennett in the first, because I find it so hard to fathom why Minnesota wouldn't do that. Why they wouldn't just shake a hand the second that was on the table.
I agree with you. The only thing that I could maybe understand is, do you believe that Anthony Bennett is going to turn out to be a good player?
What do you think about
I don't think he's going to be a bust. He was not a number one pick, and I don't blame him for that. The Cleveland Cavaliers made that selection. I think he was a first-round selection. He was probably a top 10, top 12 pick. I think he's a good rotation guy. He's probably better served, at least right now. I can't project 5-6 years down the road, but if I look at his overall skill set, I think he's probably a career second-unit guy, a solid, big body.
I don't
project him being an all-star one day.
So not even a what's a comparable? Zach Randall.
No. I don't believe so.
Eric Smith.
You look at that, yep. Andrew. And then say the pick you're going to get is not going to be great, considering Cleveland, you assume, is going to be a pretty good team.
Right.
So does it really come down to, we're basically trading Wiggins for Love straight up?
And it all comes down to how much you believe in Wiggins.
Right.
At the end of the day. He's Eric Smith. I'm Andrew Walker. Ryan Fabro is in. It's Today in History for July the 25th. Now and then, let's do it.
Now and then, a hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history. I'll be back in
time. July 25th, this day in history, Ryan Fabro is in. What was going on 10, 20, 100 years ago? I don't know.
We're starting in 1965, Walker. Well, this studio is weird. We're in the old studio.
We are in the old studio. So if we sound rattled today, it's because it's like we're doing a show on the moon is what it feels like.
It does.
I remember when this was the good studio. Like when this place first opened, wow, this is really nice.
Now it's all made of styrofoam.
Yeah.
Eggshells.
I expect to see like a bathroom in the corner or something like that.
You can create one.
Yeah. I think there's asbestos somewhere in here.
1965 on this date. Bob Dylan, he uses an electric guitar for the first time. Now, I believe Bob Dylan is overrated. I think he sounds like a hobo. I can't understand him. I don't like him at all. Is there a musician that everybody loves that you kind of hate? Because Bob Dylan's that guy for me.
Bob Dylan is a good one. That's really interesting. A musician that everybody loves that I kind of hate.
Eric Smith got one. Like, I think...
I've got one. Well, listen, I don't actually hate them, but I've never understood the rabid fascination with the Beatles. I enjoy them. They're okay. But considering most of their songs are 2 minutes long and half their songs just repeat the same thing 17 times
what,
over.
Everything has to be Stairway to Heaven?
No, but give me something better than a minute and 45 and just repeating the same thing.
I mean, I really like country music, especially new country. But some of the old country, I don't quite get. Willie Nelson, yeah, there's one.
Not everybody likes Willie Nelson.
No, that's true. Well, not everybody likes
I think
likes everybody.
You too, good band. Come on, they're not like the best thing ever. Damn it. What was it with that year? The U2 song was the Raptors intro. That was bad, Eric Smith.
It was bad, and so was that that stupid Batman song that they had as well back in the day.
Ja Rule. Everybody likes him. I think he's terrible. Where is Ja Rule, alive or dead?
I believe he's alive, and I think he's out of jail.
Sadly, I saw him on the Queen Latifah talk show a week ago.
No.
Sadly, why were you watching the Queen Latifah show?
I have no idea. It was on in my house.
That could be worse than home. Brady watching The View. That could be worse.
I wasn't really watching. I was just, hey, Ja Rule, he's there. He was really, really ripped up. Like, anyway, there you go. So there's your Ja Rule update. 2003 on this date, Michael Phelps breaks records in both the butterfly and the individual medley on the same day at the World Swimming Championships. I'm a huge World Swimming Champs fan.
Yep.
You guys good swimmers?
No.
You know what's funny is that, so... I mean, you get bored working out and doing the same thing all the time. So, you know, for me anyway, you try to switch it up. And maybe I get into a running phase or a weights phase or a basketball phase. So for a while there, a couple of years ago, I was swimming most days. And it's the same as that annoying ping pong pro yesterday. People are trying to give me tips. Oh, you want to be, like, efficient through the water and this? I'm like, no. The less efficient I am, the better workout I'm getting. See, we just swam 4 laps. You burned 8 calories. I burned 140 because I thrash around like a seal.
That's good.
I can pretty much just stay alive in the water. That's about it.
That's okay. That's the most important thing. All right, birthdays on this date. Not the best list ever. Doug Drabek. He was a good pitcher, unlike his son.
Doug
Kyle.
Drabek.
Kyle Drabek.
How best old and worst coming up at 6:48.
That's right. How old is Doug Drabek, Walker?
I'm going to say he is 57.
54.
52, correct answer. Anybody know how Kyle Drabek's doing down there?
No.
He had a good relief appearance 2 nights ago.
Good for you.
That boy, Kyle. Thank you. Halliday deal.
According to John Lott.
There you go. How about Matt LeBlanc of Friends fame? Was he your favorite Friends character? I know it's Jennifer Aniston on the guy side.
I always like Chandler. Chandler is always my favorite.
Yeah, I think that's the popular answer.
47.
Knocks it down. He's right.
Whoa,
Eric
wow.
Smith.
Huge. Hey, nicely done.
Huge Friends fan.
Although we talked about Jennifer Aniston the other day, and she was 45. So I think they're all in the same age group.
His show episodes, have you seen that? It's actually pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Courtney Cox is 50 this year.
And she's still a smoke show.
At some point this year.
You know, it should be controversial later in the show and say, my favorite Friends girl, Phoebe. Hot take.
I had a friend that his favorite That 70s Show girl was not Mila Kunis. It was Donna, the redhead.
Didn't you say that the same friend has her in the laminated top five as well? That's a little extreme.
Yeah, but Mila Kunis got way hotter, like, after the show.
Yeah, she's still better on the show than Donna, the redhead, whatever her name is.
Kind of like Donna. Oh, but I love Mila Kunis now, but anyway.
opens cans with her hands.
And this is big for Eric Smith. Tracy Murray turns 43 today. Congratulations, Tracy.
Do you follow him on Twitter?
I do. He's actually the, he's the color analyst for the UCLA Bruins.
There you go.
And why wouldn't you follow that then?
We gotta go. So the number one song this date, 1972. It's Jim Croce with Bad Bad Leroy Brown.
Didn't he own the 76ers?
No, that was Pat Croce.
All right, duly noted. 5:56. It's Now and Then with Ryan Favreau. We get back into Marcus Stroman. Would John Gibbons have left him in if he would have reached 120 pitches? It was a conversation we were all having in the stands. 602, Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. You see, he's standing about 6'4".
Stroman and the Jays one-hit the Red Sox.
The 1-2 swung on and missed. Marcus Stroman struck out Brock Holt three times today. He has not allowed a hit through six innings.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
6:03, good morning. Brady and Walker on your Friday. It was all about Marcus Stroman yesterday. I was there. Andrew Walker, he's Eric Smith. He was there as well. You were with your old man. And was there a point where you looked at each other and you thought, boy, we might be witnessing something special today at the ballpark?
It was probably going into the sixth. After that fifth inning, sixth inning started, he gets through the sixth. And I think that's the first time we even really mentioned it. You knew it was going on, but I think everybody's got that sort of superstition in them. Like you, one of 40,000 people, are going to be the one that ends it for Marcus Stroman. So you just kind of keep your mouth shut and you don't talk a whole lot about it. And we were surrounded by, we had a family beside us who had three kids, and they weren't loud, but they wanted to get up every 17 seconds to go to the bathroom, to go get more food, to go get something else. So it literally was, and the dad was getting pissed. He even said to me a couple of times, like, don't ever bring kids to a ball game. He must not have thought I had kids. I was like, don't, if you have kids, never bring them. This is the worst. And that was, so there was nobody else really around us talking about it. So it was just sort of my dad and I kind of talking the game, which was kind of nice in some senses.
Yeah, we were talking about it without saying the actual words, right? Because we were talking about the pitch count.
Sure.
And things like that, and how, his slider, and boy, they haven't hit a ball out of the infield and all this kind of stuff. But I think people are fairly smart. Like, if there would have been some idiot sitting in front of you just blindly saying, wow, he's got a no-hitter, I'd like to think he would have been shushed down by the crowd around
him. I would imagine so, yeah.
Especially through six. I was amazed, because like you said, it was a party in there, right? I mean, they were pounding the Red Sox. Everybody's having a good time. It's in the sun. And then when he got through five and a half, basically, the stadium kind of had this murmur to it. Right? It almost got, like you said, it got quieter more so than louder, as everybody knew he was double digit outs away.
And it's kind of cool.
Sorry, single digit.
It's kind of cool as well to be a part of the moment, even when the hit happened and Victorino bloops that went into center field.
Oh, awful hit.
And it was an awful hit. And you could see that it was dropping, no matter how hard the guys were charging, coming, out from the infield and in from the outfield, no matter how hard they were charging. And as we're talking about this, I'm looking up at the monitor and I see the highlights going of Stroman doing exactly what I was about to talk about, and that is that he didn't quite tip the cap, but a little just sort of hand on the bill, a little acknowledgement to the folks that I would say probably a good half, if not two-thirds of the stadium standing, giving him the standing O after that Victorino hit for the appreciation of what he did. And I actually like that he didn't take the hat off and really acknowledge the moment. It's like, no, I was the first guy of the inning. I still got a job to do. And he was chawing on that cud in his mouth and the big wad of gum and just, no, it's all business. Let's go. Give me the ball. It sucks, but let's go. Let's keep going.
You know what the most impressive part was to me yesterday about Stroman is that, we'll talk about the pitch count in a second, because I wonder what was going to happen in the late. It was going to be an issue. But he was at 90 pitches through those six innings. He gives up the bloop to Victorino. You know how many pitches? I don't know if you read this. You know how many pitches it took him to get out of that inning, to get the next three outs?
I didn't read it, but I think I remember hearing that his pitch count finished at 96 or 97, so I'm going to guess it was only five or six pitches.
It took him five pitches to get the next three outs.
Yeah.
Five pitches. Incredible.
And you know what? The Victorino hit as well was the only ball that got out of the infield.
It was the only ball that got out of the infield. He was filthy. Now, we said yesterday that they get a, I guess it kind of felt like a bonus win, but they had taken two or three from the Red Sox after that 14-1 debacle in the opener. And you had a chance to win three or four from a team that's obviously struggling. And the word we used yesterday was ruthless. Be ruthless. Go out there. And there was the right guy in the hill to do it. And did Marcus Stroman ever prove that?
Absolutely. I mean, and it begs the question that if you had the game on the line, the season on the line, if it comes down to one game, is he your guy? Has he already proven that, and we haven't even hit August yet? You've got 2+ months of the season left to go. If you have that game at the end of the year, if you've got the wild card game, who's getting the start? Are you going with the experienced Burley? Are you going with Dickey floating up the knuckler? Are you going with the rookie who's been flashing some pretty impressive stuff over the course of this season?
I think Dickey's been better than a lot of people give credit for this season. But who's kidding who? It's down to Burley or Stroman. If you get that wild card game and everyone's rested, you might just have to go with the kid.
You might.
You might.
Because worst case scenario, you throw him out there in the first couple of innings. If he gets roughed up a little bit, you bring Burley out of the bullpen as or something. Who knows? But
who's their ace? Who would you go to? Since he's made 10 starts now. Marcus Stroman has made 10 starts.
Over the last 2 months, he's been their ace.
He's made 10 starts. His ERA is 2.21.
Yep.
That's better than any rookie out there, including Masahiro Tanaka. Now, his ERA is 3 1/3, but that's largely based to a couple of ugly relief appearances when he first came up. Since he was moved into that rotation, he's been damn near unhittable.
And he's been your ace over the last 2 months when you factor in as well as Burley has pitched at times. Obviously, he's had a lot of the indecisions and the no decisions, I should say. So it will be interesting to see if this plays out. I mean, if he continues on this path, I don't know how you don't go to him. You almost have to hand him the ball.
Situation presents itself.
And you can't say, well, he's a rook in the pressure situation. Well, no, is this not a pressure situation, playing in a tight division, trying to win a division or secure a wild card spot? Again, this could all blow up in their face, but we're playing the hypothetical of 2 months from now, you got a one game, you know, winning in. Man, he is real impressive to watch.
And you wanted to trade him for Chase Headley, you idiots. Let's do the six-pack on you Friday.
This is your Friday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
Jays Yankees, by the way, coming up 7 o'clock tonight. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jays have not won at Yankee Stadium since 1908. When the big band was they haven't won there for a long time. It's been 16 in a row. Number six, running back Ray Rice of the Baltimore Ravens handed down a 2-game suspension, Eric, from the NFL following his off-season arrest for domestic violence. So he'll miss the first 2 games. Bernard Pierce is going to be the feature back. Fantasy poolies take note. But it raised the conversation yesterday for a lot of people that pointed out, and rightly so, I might add, that if you get caught with a joint, you're gone for 4. You knock a woman unconscious, you're gone for 2. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to see something is amiss there.
I feel like we could do an entire show on this, or at the very least an entire segment, not just in the six pack here. I don't know how anybody could disagree with you. Everybody must agree right now that 2 games is not enough. When you see him, and we don't know entirely what went down in the elevator, but it doesn't matter when you see a limp body being dragged out by one arm.
Yeah, it doesn't
matter. Neanderthal style out of an elevator. It's ridiculous.
We will get more on this, some more in-depth thoughts from you coming up at the 6:50. We will make sure we dedicate some time to Ray Rice. Send us a text as well, 590-590, at Fan590Walker on Twitter, or at Eric_Smith. Speaking of NFL running backs, number 5, Marshawn Lynch is not expected to be present for the first day of Seattle's training camp. Close friend and former teammate Michael Robinson was on the NFL Network yesterday and basically broke the news, said that Lynch will hold out of camp. He wants a raise on his $5.5 million salary this season. He signed a 4-year deal 3 years ago with Seattle. I'm all for running backs and high-skill position guys in the NFL renegotiating deals, because your window to make money is so slim, and it's such a difficult position in terms of the toll it takes on your body. But is there a limit? If Lynch is getting paid, you know, $800,000 like Chris Johnson was a few years ago, by all means, hold out. The guy's already gotten paid. He's making $5.5 million. Is there a limit here?
I think there's got to be a limit, because there's also got to be an appreciation. I know professional sports is a different world than what we live in sometimes, or most times. But there's got to be something to be said, too, for honoring the deal that you sign. And it's not like it's a bad deal. It's $5.5 million. You're coming off.
He's not clipping coupons.
No, and you're coming off a Super Bowl season, a hell of a year individually, and now you want to be a potential distraction to your team going into camp and dealing with this garbage? And why wait this long? Why not wrap it up then? If you wanted it done, why not bring it up in April and May, as opposed to right on the heels of camp?
Number 4, Lars Eller, the latest NHLer to avoid arbitration. 4 years, $14 million in Montreal. He's 25 years old. Number 3, RBC Canadian Open at Royal Montreal. We got to play the audio
a little later this morning. We were talking to our Sportsnet golf analyst, Ian Leggett, yesterday about the sleeper, the Canadian, because there's 19 of them in the field. The guy he was looking out for. Remember the name he said? Taylor Pendrish. And he shot a 5-under-65 on day one. He's one back of the leaders. Michael Putnam and Tim Petrovic, not exactly Tiger and Rory. David Hearn, a 3-under-67. He's three back. Graham Dillette, 1-under. Mike Weir, even par.
Maybe Ian Leggett is renegotiating a deal today.
That's very true. Peter Osterhaus, a longtime legendary golf analyst, going to join us later this morning on the show at 7:22. You got to listen to that. We will ask about this tournament. And, of course, the top of the leaderboard, a little underwhelming, but such is the Canadian Open field this year. Number two, AL East update. This is what happened around the majors. The late game was Baltimore-Seattle. The Orioles, a 4-0 win over Iwakuma and the Mariners, Eric. So that means Baltimore still leads the division by three. But the Jays and the Yankees, who hold off Texas 4-2, are tied with a second wild card spot in the American League.
This is going to be fun. It's going to be real fun through the stretch here. And you just wish that Baltimore would come back to earth a little bit, because they just quietly are continuing to do their business on what's supposed to be a tough West Coast trip.
Jays and Yankees tonight, 7 o'clock. Coverage begins at Sportsnet 590, The Fan, in Sportsnet Ontario. The number one thing you need to know is all about Marcus Stroman yesterday. Ruthless is what we called it. They take 3-4 from the Red Sox, an 8-0 win. Stroman no hits the Sox through six and gives up just a one bloop single from Shane Victorino. With the bat, Juan Francisco knocks out three hits. He goes 3-for-5, drives in four, a home run, finishes a double shy of the cycle. We almost had a no-hitter and a cycle in the same game. Someone's got to call the Elias Sports Bureau to see if that has ever happened before.
And did you think you'd ever see Juan Francisco legging out a triple? It helped that it was a near home run, off the glove, bouncing off the wall. But, man, I don't think I ever thought that I would see him rumbling around the bases for three.
Yeah, Greg Zahn didn't like the scoring on that one.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Always the best sports talk on Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
6:23, one final day of Eric Smith here in the morning show. It is Brady and Walker. Good morning. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith. We'll rip him apart at 6:31 this morning as we do our latest edition of Follow or Unfollow.
Looking forward to it.
Yep, I have a really good one today. So we've ripped you this week for, all right, you follow your, well, it ended up being your wife's Twitter account, but it was a defunct one, so that wasn't very good. Yo Gabba Gabba, you follow on Twitter, which
yes.
is ridiculous.
DJ Lance Rock.
Detlef Schrempf.
I unfollowed.
former Seattle Supersonic forward. And on Monday, it was John Cougar Mellencamp.
The Coug.
All the weird Twitter accounts that you follow. Not as weird as Brady, who follows, like, real-time updates of the Titanic sinking, but weird,
see,
weird nonetheless.
I haven't even gone through yours, but I assume it's already been picked apart enough, so I'm just going to leave you alone, and I will simply take the heat. No, it's my last day, so I'll leave it alone.
That's coming up in about 7 minutes from now. We'll also take a look at where the Blue Jays sit now in this playoff chase and where they could sit after the weekend, because there's three fascinating series that begin tonight around the American League. So yesterday, I was last night after the game, I went for dinner, killed a couple hours, and then went down to the Steam Whistle Brewery where Dominic Moore's Smash Fest was being held. And basically, it's his third annual. Picture like the celebrity charity golf tournament. It's the same type of thing, except it's ping pong in a warehouse with open bars. It's a great idea. And I didn't play in it as much as I love table tennis, and we usually play around here on Friday.
You wanted to play. You had the itch. No?
I had the itch a little bit. Yeah, okay. I had the itch a little bit. Because, you know, who out there plays a ton of ping pong? You see all these guys playing in this tournament, and I think I'm a pretty good player. We play a lot. We get really competitive around here. So the one table that was open, it was basically this practice table. And it was the equivalent, I don't know if you've seen the ads on like television or before, but it was like the equivalent of like a pitching machine.
Yes.
And it was on one side of the table, and there's this big net, so it fires balls over so you can practice your forehand or your backhand. And it does one like every 2 seconds, so you can kind of get into a rhythm, kind of like Forrest Gump, right? And there was I don't know if he was a professional. I guess that's what you'd call him, but he was a sponsored table tennis guy. He had the shirt on, and so I went over to this table and I tried it out. And you get into a rhythm, and I'm trying to hit it harder and harder and doing okay. And then this guy just starts giving me tips, but he was really like offended out of all the stuff that I was doing wrong. My stance, my grip, the fact that I was trying to hit these smashes, he just thought I should be lobbing it like I was 6 years old.
He does know it's ping pong, right?
I don't know if he does.
Okay.
I don't know if he does. Anyway, it was like, you know how it is. Like, picture you're playing billiards and some pool shark keeps giving you tips. Or you're on the golf course and some guy keeps coming over at the driving range.
To me, that's a little bit different, only in the sense that, and listen, I could not beat whoever this guy was. There are professionals.
Oh, I'm sure he's very good.
There are some absolute freaks of ping pong. But at the end of the day, it's ping pong. It's table tennis. It's it's ping pong. If I'm out on the golf course and Ian Leggett or a local golf pro at even just some small course, to me, he still has something to offer. He's, you know, we're talking ping pong here.
Yeah, but
come on.
Okay, but it's the same with golf. Okay, so you go out golfing and maybe you don't get as much as you want. You're not fixing your game in the course of 18 holes, right? If you want help, you'll ask for it.
That I agree with. I think maybe I'm just drawing the line in the sand of somebody's trying to tell me how to change my grip or hold my stance a little bit different in golf. I could appreciate somebody trying to tell me how I should hit the ball properly in ping pong, something I might play once in a while. If I'm not really like a regular at spin or I don't have my own table or I'm not really looking to make the ping pong tour, I really don't care about whether I should be hitting it hard or lofting it or spinning my serve backhand, forehand. I mean, come on.
It was a great event. Kudos to Dominic Moore. The third annual went off fantastically. There was a lot of guys there. Mike Camilleri, Logan Couture, Michael Delzato was there. Everybody had a great time. But you, ping pong pro, Shuddy, driving me crazy. 628, Brady and Walker, follow or unfollow, coming up with Eric Smith. The Yankees and the Toronto Blue Jays, three-game set tonight after that big win, courtesy of Marcus Stroman yesterday. Hard to believe, but one of the low points this season for the Blue Jays, and it's been an up-and-down type of campaign, was that sweep at the hands of the Yankees at Yankee Stadium. The streak, if you've forgotten about it, we'll remind you, it's up to 16 games in a row they have lost in New York at Yankee Stadium. And we said at the time, if this is going to be a club that makes the playoffs, and this statement looks like it's really accurate now, if they're going to make the playoffs, they're going to have to find a way to win some games at Yankee Stadium.
100%. There's
no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
Absolutely. And I don't know what it is about that stadium. I mean, what is it about certain places? You remember they've had their issues in Tampa Bay as well. And I think you look at then success against the division, whether it's in your joint or theirs, you're going to have to win in their place. Yeah, but you're going to have to beat those teams, period. And that's been one of the issues for recent years. And maybe it's starting to turn a bit this season. I remember we were talking about at one point this season being 6-7 games above 500 against the East. It fell down to 500. They're now back up because of the series against Boston. But you can't do all of this work at home and then go to the road and drop all three or even two or three against New York. You've got to keep that ball moving.
Like, yes, the Jays do have trouble at Tropicana. They haven't won a series there forever. But they're still 3-4 there this season. It's not great, but it's not atrocious.
No, they're not losing
16 in a row at Tropicana Field.
And 2 of 22. I mean, 2-20 over the last 22 games at Yankee Stadium. That's just beyond ridiculous. So hopefully it can change tonight. Because I know you're, I think, not as much of a believer or a fan of momentum perhaps as I am. I've been a big backer of it for a long time. I think when the vibes and the feelings are going good, you keep it rolling. The locker room's a little lighter. It's a looser atmosphere, and it plays out onto the field. I think if you take what you've just done against Boston, you apply it again tonight, and suddenly you get that first win, that changes the tone for the start of this road trip, as opposed to lose the first one. You've already forgotten about what you did at home, and it's, oh my God, we lost again at Yankee Stadium. Now we got to come back on Saturday and prove we can do it. What is this monkey on our back? And I think it just kind of sets the wrong tone right from the beginning.
I agree with you, and I don't agree with you in terms of momentum, because after the Jays lost 14-1 to Boston, I was the first guy saying, there's no such thing as momentum. It's all about the starting pitcher the next day and J-Hap, who came out and tossed a gem. And no one's saying there was any good momentum for the Red Sox after that win. I'd like to believe there's some good momentum for the Blue Jays as well. But in the vein of being consistent, I'm going to say that there's not, right? It's as good as your next day's starting pitcher. At least in this case for the Blue Jays, that guy is Mark Burley, who's been really good all season. 631, Brady and Walker, let's do follow or unfollow.
Brady and Walker's follow or unfollow.
All right, follow or unfollow, the part of the show where we rip apart Eric Smith's Twitter account and basically poke fun at some of the follows that we can't understand why they're in there. What do we got today, Fabs? Ryan Faber, our producer, is in.
This is a good one. Apparently, you found this, Walker, but I have some examples of what happens on this Twitter account. And Eric Smith apparently follows Women's Health Magazine, at Women's Health Mag. And here are a couple of selections. I asked Max to play the Dawson's.
Yep, Greek. That makes sense.
Right? That does make sense. It applies.
Okay, so on at Women's Health Mag, how many leafy greens can you ID correctly? And nine things no one ever tells you about conditioner. So, Eric Smith.
I can think of a couple things about conditioner.
First of all,
I just want to clarify.
How many leafy greens can you
make? Yes. I want to clarify, you're not a woman. A woman.
Right? I am, last I checked,
okay.
I am not a woman.
This is the description of a Women's Health Mag followed by Eric_Smith. Women's Health Mag, your ultimate guide to looking and feeling great. Get the latest in health, fitness, sex, beauty, and more.
Doesn't say for man or woman.
Yes, it does. It's Women's Health Mag. That's the title.
I'm sure they have articles for men as well. There is an explanation, I will give you guys this one as well. I will happily unfollow. I simply saw a retweeted tweet one day that I thought my wife would be interested in. I sent her the link, and then she said she's not on Twitter except for the four tweets she had in November of 2012 on her handle. So I said, oh, I'll follow it for you, and I can send you some links if I see anything. That was better. I would buzz myself, too. Finally, Max gets it right, though. Took all week, Max. Good job.
At Women's Health Mag, the gym
cookie.
Is my hashtag happy hour smiley face. Yes, you really do need to unfollow.
That's embarrassing. Yeah. That's the worst.
That is something that
it took you all week, but that's the worst.
That is something that the normal co-host of the show would follow.
Oh, 100%.
He's probably listening right now and,
Greg
and following
Brady
as we speak.
Greg Brady would follow Women's Health Mag on Twitter.
Yeah, Eric's looking out for his wife. Brady just, like, really interested in stuff like that.
He's looking for waxing tips.
How to boost sexual desire in a long-term relationship or marriage.
Well, you might learn something from that.
We can all learn something from that.
Actually, can you forward that on?
6:33, Brady and Walker. Still to come, Andrew Wiggins signs in Cleveland on his rookie deal. What does it mean for the Kevin Love sweepstakes and best and worst? What we liked, what we didn't like in last night's sports coming up at 6:47.
Keep it here for more Brady and Walker, only on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You're like a screen flashing insufficient.
6:41, good morning, Brady and Walker. On your Friday, I'm Andrew Walker. He is Eric Smith getting you set for your weekend. Mark Burley, Hirooki Kuroda's. The Jays finally try to win one at Yankee Stadium tonight, 7 o'clock. Coverage begins right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ray Rice suspended 2 games for assaulting his wife. And it's a good thing he didn't smoke a joint because he'd get double that. Eric Smith has some interesting thoughts on Ray Rice coming up at 6:50. But first, Andrew Wiggins. All these trade rumors, Eric, of him going to, well, namely Minnesota in a deal for Kevin Love. He signs his rookie deal yesterday. And what the NBA does is it says you can't be traded for the next 30 days. So if we were expecting a Kevin Love to hook up with LeBron in the next little bit, it's not going to happen. What does this do for the whole scenario?
It actually maybe makes it a little bit clearer or makes the potential that much easier in some senses, because if a guy doesn't have a contract signed, you're just trading his rights. And while it would cost Wiggins a lot of money, he could, in theory, hold out wherever he was dealt. If he was dealt to the Minnesota Timberwolves for Kevin Love, he could simply say, I'm not going to play for you. I'm not going to sign a contract and try and force his way somewhere else. By signing the deal, he's now locked into his deal. He's locked into the cap hit that you know you'll be either keeping in Cleveland or acquiring in Minnesota. The NBA has a structured rookie scale where Everybody's locked into a certain slot. One makes more than five. Five makes more than eight. Eight makes more than 12, and so on. So you know what his rate is now. You know you've got him locked in. And yes, I guess in theory, Andrew, he could still say, even with a contract, even being dealt, I'm not going to play. But then you're not getting paid, and the team truly controls you. And if they want to play hardball, could make you just sit for the next 3-4 years. So this, to me, just kind of puts the talk, or score, sorry, maybe puts the actual deal on hold, but only furthers the talk that will go on for the next 30 days.
We deal in rumors and innuendo all the time. And what I had trouble with is because it all depends. It depends what Wiggins is. It depends what Bennett is. But I don't think for a second, I put myself in Minnesota's shoes. And if I'm offered for a guy in Kevin Love that is going to leave at some point in the next couple of years, if I get offered Andrew Wiggins, the number one overall draft pick, a first-round pick, and Anthony Bennett, if I'm Minnesota and that was on the table, I would have already done it. So there's something about this whole thing that makes me wonder if it was ever on the table.
And I hear you.
I mean, how much better can you do?
Well, the other thing, too, is that you look to that point. You look at the roster for the Cleveland Cavaliers, and you think, what is it Minnesota would want? What is it that they're holding out for then from that team? Or is it simply that they don't like that offer enough? It seems like it's pretty good when you're talking about the number one overall pick in Wiggins with last year's number one in Bennett with a future number one coming as well. Now, that future number one, probably not a fantastic selection based on the fact
chances
you assume
are,
Cleveland's
yeah.
going to be a good team, so it's a low pick. But you look at the rest of the roster.
Is
there
anybody
else on that team?
Would you prefer Tristan Thompson to Anthony Bennett?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm sure Cleveland would want to give that up. Maybe that's the one that's holding it up. I don't know that there'd be this grand desire to have Deion Waiters. And outside of that, there's not much else on the roster at this point. You know, you're hoping to have Varejao back. You're looking at it. You've added some guys in free agency. You know, Ray Allen might be joining the team. But as far as existing players under contract by the Cleveland Cavaliers, Thompson would be the only other guy that you look at and say, all right, is it we want Wiggins and Thompson in a pick, and if you don't do that, we're looking elsewhere. Because I tell you, the package that allegedly is rumored out there from the Chicago Bulls is a pretty good one as well. So I think this might open the door a little bit for Minnesota to start engaging other suitors. The interesting team to me that still is out there, and I don't want to play the rumor game too much, but Kevin Love would love to be playing in California. The Los Angeles Lakers have done next to nothing in this offseason outside of acquiring Jeremy Lin.
Yeah.
They signed
even though they were rumored to be in on Melo, obviously rumored on LeBron, all that.
And you've got Kobe Bryant hopefully coming back. You've got Steve Nash, coming off a terrible year that was ravaged by injuries, probably at the end of his rope. But if you're trying to make a one last ditch run with Kobe, he doesn't have much around him right now. Maybe you simply just don't have the pieces to be able to get into the Love sweepstakes, though. But it's interesting that LA, not only have they not done anything with the roster, they still don't even have a coach.
Another question I want to ask you that I will later on in the show, and we discussed this yesterday for a little bit with Steven Stamkos and the whole idea of playing at home. Now, when these rumors first started of Andrew Wiggins to Minnesota, there was a narrative out there, probably mostly by fans, that said if the Toronto Raptors ever had designs on having hometown boy Andrew Wiggins in their lineup, him going to Minnesota in a deal like this might be the quickest way for something like that to happen. I'll ask you that coming up a little later on in the show. Best and worst, let's do it.
Best.
Bruce Smith.
And worst.
Eric Smith.
With Brady and Walker.
Sure, you can't argue. Bruce Smith is the best. And you are the worst. It is best and worst.
Who does those creepy voicers? That's not Cutler.
Oh, it's Ryan Favreau, our producer.
I know.
Oh, okay, all right. Well, no, everybody knows that. We take a look at last night in sports here on Brady and Walker. Best win. Worst loss that we saw out there. Best player. And worst player. Where do you want to start? I'll take worst loss, and I'm going to give it. I stayed up to watch some of this game, most of this game. I saw all the runs anyway, and that was Seattle's 4-0 loss to Baltimore. I mean, it's kind of a win-win or a lose-lose for the Blue Jays because you're picking up ground on somebody either way. But if you're Seattle, you are at home, you lose this game and fall out of the wild card spot. Playoffs were to start today. The Mariners are out. You still can't hit. They need to add a bat in the worst way from what John Morosi told us yesterday. And you do it with Iwakuma on the hill. You might not win when your 3, 4, 5 starters are out there, but you damn well better win when one of Felix Hernandez and Iwakuma's on the mound. And you got blanked
That is no good if you're the Seattle Mariners. You get the Baltimore Orioles again tonight with King Felix. But worst loss goes to Seattle. What do you have for best win?
Best win? Going to sound like Joe Homer in a sense, but how do you not give it to the Toronto Blue Jays to take 3 of 4 against the Boston Red Sox behind a near cycle for Francisco and, more importantly, the near no-hitter, the one-hitter from Marcus Stroman? That, to me, has got to be the best win from yesterday.
It was a pretty good win. Best player, I'm going to give it to Taylor Prendish, the Canadian amateur who, just like that, is one-shot Prendrith, sorry, T-H, one shot off the lead at the RBC Canadian Open behind leader Tim Petrovic and Michael Putnam. Yesterday, we had Sportsnet golf analyst Ian Leggedon. This was before anybody teed off. And we asked him, of those 19 Canadians, including David Hearn and Graeme Dillette and Mike Weir, who's the under-the-radar guy to watch?
Taylor Prendrith is the 18th-ranked amateur in the world. He's an All-American. He won the Porter Cup last year, which is the third, probably the third-largest amateur event in the United States. He runner-up in the Canadian amateur. He just absolutely has a full tour game.
And all Prendis does is go out and fire a 5-under-65. That's some pretty good golf analysis by our boy Ian Leggett.
That's what I'm saying. He should be at the table today with the suits, trying to get a new deal. Good on you, Lego. And I'll tell you what, the Porter Cup going on right now in Lewiston, New York. So you mentioned the Porter Cup that Prendrith won last year. It's going on as we speak at the Niagara Falls Golf and Country Club.
All right, worst player, who do you got?
All right, worst player, I'll stay golf. Worst player has got to be John Daly.
Oh, not long, John.
Big name in a field that doesn't have a ton of them. He is
big pants.
Third last, bright pants. Third last, 6 over. In the Canadian Open, but your guy Stephen Ames not that far back as well. He's 4 over, so he's tied Ames. For the fifth worst score.
Stephen Ames, great guy. It's best and worst. Speaking of not so great guys, Ray Rice gets suspended for 2 games, Eric, for this offseason, the domestic assault on his wife. We remember the video, remember the elevator, remember that story. It made the rounds yesterday because, I mean, rightly so. Roger Goodell lays down the law, and he gets suspended 2 games, as he should for conduct such as that. But if Ray Rice decided yesterday he was going to get a DUI or be caught with a joint, or
like Josh Gordon,
or take the wrong cold medicine,
right,
he's getting 4 games. What does it say when you smoke weed, you get 4? You knock a woman unconscious, you get 2. Understandably, there was a lot of people a little rattled by that idea yesterday.
And let me make sure that I'm very clear about this. I believe that the suspension absolutely should have been more. There is zero tolerance in my mind for a guy that hits a woman, let alone knocks her out, and then drags her limp body by one arm out of the elevator, Neanderthal style. I mean, it's disgusting to see. Everything that I heard yesterday, and this to me does make a difference if I'm the judge and jury, but Roger Goodell was apparently or allegedly swayed by the testimony from Ray Rice's then fiance, now wife. She apparently went into the meeting as well, into the sit down with Goodell. And according to some reports, the video that some have seen shows his then fiance, now wife, allegedly again, viciously attacking Ray, to which he responds with the punch, and it was her head hitting the bar, the beam essentially, in the elevator that knocked her out. I'm not condoning by any means, but the fact is that she may be the one that's ultimately responsible for the fact that it's a lesser suspension because she swayed the testimony and said, listen, I forgive him, he forgives me, we've been married since, we've gone to counseling, we have children together, we're doing well.
But that doesn't,
you know?
But that doesn't change, that doesn't, you can murder someone and their family can forgive you. If you go in front of the judge and state your plea, well, it's still about accountability
100%.
For your actions.
Oh, I'm just trying to give people the information that's out there. To me, I'd have no problem with the guy being suspended for half the season, let alone 4 games. I just, you know, to me, it sends the wrong message, especially, I mentioned quickly Josh Gordon. Listen, the guy's got his own issues, no doubt.
The guy's got issues.
When you mention weed, a guy could be out for an entire year because of drugs but yet a guy can knock his wife unconscious, and it's two games, no biggie.
And here's another, you want to hear figures. So Ray Rice, because of all this, he was also levied a fine of $58,000. You can think it's substantial. You don't have to think it's substantial, whatever. Joe Horn, for pulling out the damn cell phone out of the goalpost and pretending to call on a touchdown, and that happened 10 years ago, was fined $30,000. It's basically the same.
And that fine of 58 is based on the per-game salary of 2013, not the per-game salary of 2014 since a raise has come in, which he's going to be getting paid over $400,000 a game.
Now, there's a lot of layers to it, and none of them very good. 590-590 is the text line. You can hit us on Twitter as well, at Brady and Walker, at Fan590Walker, or at Eric_Smith. Coming up at 7:14, don't forget Blue Jays ticket window opens courtesy of the great Blue Heron Casino. We have tickets for the Jays and the Orioles. What a series that's going to be on August the 6th. At 7:02, we are back. The Jays win 8-0 over the Boston Red Sox. Can they win at Yankee Stadium? And did John Gibbons have a tough decision to make on Stroman's pitch count as that no-no got deeper?